Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated joins us now here on the Wizards Talk podcast. So I guess the elephant in the room for anybody that's concerned with Wizards basketball is, what is the very latest with Tim Connelly?
Well, Tim Connelly is interviewing with the Wizards, perhaps even as we speak. I know it could have been as early as today. I think it is today, on Friday. The Wizards have a shot at getting him, but I think it's going to come down to what kind of financial package that they'll put on the table. I mean, Tim is negotiating, or will negotiate, from a position of strength.
Yes.
He enjoys his job in Denver. He loves the people he works with. He has an extremely close relationship with Josh Kroenke, the owner of the Nuggets. So he has no problem rejecting an offer from Washington and going back to his former job. What I think will get him there is a Scott Brooks-like offer, a significant offer that exceeds $5 million per year. If the Wizards come with that type of package, I think they have got a good chance of landing Tim Connelly. If they don't, I think he'll be back in Denver.
So any person that just knows it's just about money is going to say it's just about money. Why would he take the Wizards' job, considering what he's been able to accomplish so far in Denver? Young talent, international scouting has been very good. A team that went as far as they did, second best record in the West. What would lure him back to Washington besides money?
Well, I think, and look, we can acknowledge that there is a familiarity with Washington, cutting his teeth in the organization, being from the area. His family is from the area. I don't think that those are primary reasons, but that's sort of part of the whole equation. Now, why would he go from a team on the rise to a team that is in flux? General managers, I think Tim is one of them, love to build. Like, they love to be part of a rebuilding process because it allows them to kind of flex their muscle. It allows them to come to a place like this at the combine and showcase and basically be there to get guys and to look for the next guys. Now, right now, Denver has a pretty full roster. You know, they have succeeded in finding those late first, second round draft picks who have turned out to be players. They don't really need somebody out of this combine. If you're scouting for the Wizards, you're really digging in. You're looking for those diamonds in the rough that you can flesh out your roster with for years to come. So it's just sort of ingrained in GMs to like building. And I think that's what would be a real appeal in Washington.
I'm just going to say this from, I've known Tim when he was with the Wizards before. And my biggest takeaway from him throughout the years, Chris, is he is a bona fide people person. And that matters in that job. Would you agree?
I do. I think he's a tremendous communicator. He's easy to work with and to work for. His staff in Denver will all attest to that. They are one of the lightest, most fun-loving staffs you'll have in the league. They really seem to enjoy what they do on a day-to-day basis. Not to say other people don't, but I know they, from the lower levels on up, really enjoy the whole process there. So, yeah, I think it's important to have that kind of mindset and outlook to be a general manager.
It's a tough job, as you illuminated earlier. Your best player is sitting in Miami right now in a walking boot. Your second best player, or 1B, or might be 1A now, is up for a Supermax if he makes All-NBA. Do you have a vote?
I do.
Did you vote Bradley Beal third team All-NBA?
I did not. It was close. I'm trying to remember as we speak who I put in there. I think Kyrie Irving was a borderline guy that I put in there. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it.
Right.
He was basically the seventh guard on my ballot. I wouldn't be surprised if it was fifth or sixth or higher than other people's.
And that brings me to this point of Tim or whoever takes this job. Is this a daunting challenge? Because you're going to have to make a very difficult decision. I would not want to make this decision. I feel like there are a lot of people that probably are armchair GMs and be like, I would do this. There's no easy solution in Washington.
No, there isn't. And, Tim wasn't part of the organization that traded away Carmelo Anthony, but he did reap some of the benefits in Denver of that deal. He got you know, some young pieces there, some cap flexibility, just off a big contract that might have been an albatross around their neck. I'd be curious if he took the job, if he had the same mindset where maybe moving Bradley Beal is the better way to go to start to hit the reset button. It's nothing against Bradley Beal of what he's done. He is a great player,
right,
and as you know, a great locker, like just a great overall person to have on your team. It's just when you're staring at John Wall's contract and adding Bradley Beal's contract, suddenly you are wedding yourself to two guys that quite literally can't help you as a tandem for probably 2 years.
Right.
So it wouldn't surprise me, knowing what you know, what his process is, if he did take that job, if he tried to hit the complete reset button with that group.
All right, I got to ask you about lottery night, and we've all kind of had our own opinion about it. You've had a couple of days to kind of think about it. I called it anarchy at its finest. What say you about that night and kind of moving forward, how the league will handle the T-word?
Well, I think it's a great night for anti-tanking, that's for sure. I was in the drawing room, and you know, Alvin Gentry's reaction alone was priceless. I mean, people don't know what happens inside that drawing room. It's supposed to be mostly off the record, but when Alvin Gentry, when they won, he basically came running over to the reporters and started talking, and then all of a sudden all bets were off when that happened. I think it's great to have the two top teams be non-tankers. I mean, New Orleans, their season was derailed. They were trying to be better than a second-round playoff team coming into the season, derailed by Anthony Davis. Memphis, because they were trying to get rid of that draft pick, they wanted to convey it to Boston. They weren't tanked at the end of the year. I think it's great that those two teams who were trying to be competitive for most of the season got those first two picks. And maybe it will be a signal to other teams out there that a team with a 6% chance can jump up and get that first overall pick. A team with right around there can jump up and get the second overall pick. I think that's a positive for the league as they try to maintain competitiveness throughout 82 games.
Is it your belief, like many, that the draft doesn't really start until 4?
You know, yeah, I've heard that being here and around these guys. You hear Zion, Ja Morant, R.J. Barrett. But I'd remind people that, and Washington knows, they've had some guys outside that range. Every year, the Golden State Warriors are playing right now with nobody that was picked inside that
top
three besides Kevin Durant. And Steph was the third point guard taken in his draft. I mean, Klay Thompson was 10, Draymond was second round. I mean, I guess if you're looking at sure things, I think 1, 2, and 3 are going to be locked into rotation, but I think there's a lot of talent in this draft, and a lot of guys are going to be impact players.
I have a feeling, no one has told me this, there could be a lot of movement on draft night, because I feel like there are certain teams. Obviously, Boston has a cavalcade of assets. The Sixers have a lot of picks. Do you feel like it's going to be anarchy in June also?
I think really from now until mid-July, we could see a lot of chaos and probably picking up steam right around draft night on June 20th all the way through mid-July. One thing about the lottery is that it really extended the window of the Pelicans with Anthony Davis. They don't have to make a draft day deal because they've got their guy.
Yep.
Now, maybe if they really want the Laker pick or they really want the Knicks pick to make a selection for them, maybe they make a deal then. But, you know, David Griffin is a patient guy. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see him wait until mid-July to see where the dust settles on free agency, to see what the best possible offers are before he makes a deal. So I think that's it's going to be a lot of big deals. You mentioned Boston. They want nothing to do with the three picks they have because they've got too many young guys on their roster right now. So I think you will see a lot of chatter and probably a lot of movement in and around that time frame.
Is there one kid, either through the interview process or maybe has been out here on the floor, where you have been intrigued by the prospects of him moving forward?
You know, I wish I, like, this table knows almost as much about college basketball as I do. Like, I just, as an NBA guy, this kid is a boxing guy, there's only so much RAM in my brain.
Right, right.
So I watched Zion. When Ja Morant started to rise, I watched him. I watched Kai Bowman because he went to Boston College, where I went to school. And that's pretty much it. So there's been some impressive guys with how they've spoken, how they've handled it. I'm really to see how a guy like Kyle Guy fits into the mix based on what we saw him in the tournament. Cam Reddish is someone I think could be a little bit of a sleeper because people weren't talking about him as much as Zion, as much as
I was.
Okay.
I have said Cam Reddish all year long, and people thought I was crazy. Here's why, Chris. They have put so much at Duke on Zion and RJ Barrett's plate that being the third wheel, he was kind of like Chris Bosh in Miami, where people were like, well, he's not playing like he did in Toronto, or Chris is not playing like, you know, he's not playing like he was in high school. And my thing to that was, wait till he gets to the NBA, because I clearly feel like for him, for Cam Reddish alone, high school in the NBA will be the closest things to to what you see from him. College was one of these places where he was stuck in this system. I feel like he's going to be really the diamond in the rough in this draft class, and I do know more than that than the table.
Yeah, he's someone I look at. Nasir Little, who was the MVP of the McDonald's All-American game a year ago, slipped a little bit when he went to college. Maybe he reclaims that skill. I mean, he's compared himself to Kawhi Leonard. That's a strong comparison if he's on that level. But it's just tough. I mean, these guys are so well coached at this point about what to say in this interview process. It's really tough to get any kind of read off.
I'll get you out on this. Is it Golden State again, even without Kevin Durant?
I'll tell you, them winning game two was huge because it doesn't look like Kevin Durant's going to be back for the series. I mean, he's going to be reevaluated next Wednesday, and they don't even say back then, just reevaluated for on-court activity. So I think he's probably done for the rest of this series at least. And getting that win was just monstrous because you give Portland a little bit of a crack in the door. They're good enough to knock off this version of Golden State. But now beating them 4 out of 5, you know, that's tough. I will say this, if they get to the finals, Toronto or Milwaukee is going to be a test.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a 4-game series. It's not even a 5-game series. I think that is a street fight of a series coming out of the Eastern Conference.
All right, one boxing question. Have you seen the HBO documentary on Muhammad Ali?
I have not, and I put it this way. I will see it. I don't know why there's an appetite for the 47th Muhammad Ali documentary, because I've seen a lot of them over the years.
I will say this. There is nothing that you do not know. It's just Muhammad Ali, how it was chronicled, how it was kind of packaged from when he was in the Junior Olympics to obviously the end of his career as a boxer. There's nothing that you don't know, but it's Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, and for that reason, I will watch. And I believe what LeBron's company did it with you know, Maverick Carter, who I've gotten to see some of his stuff. He did some documentaries for DAZN leading up to the Canelo fight. Like, they do an excellent job with this product. It's just like, I feel like I know Muhammad Ali at this point.
Exactly.
Unless you're going to tell me something shocking that I didn't know before. You know, when somebody brought this up to me when I said the same thing to him the other day. Like, there are a lot of kids out there that don't know Muhammad Ali. You know, teenagers that are know him sort of in a nebulous sort of way, that maybe they get to see this and they'll get a real look at a guy that was not only a great fighter, but incredibly impactful outside the ring.